This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the world championships on the Big Island.
Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown. It's good to have you on board. I feel like a kid at Christmas. I am, as I record this, about to open a box that just arrived on my front door. I've got a new set of wheels that have arrived. I've been talking about wheel signs, and I got myself a set. Going to be opening it up. So what I'm actually going to be doing is recording it. So if you want to check out the video of me unboxing my brand new Wheel Science wheels, I'm super excited. You have no idea. Then all you need to do is click on the link in the podcast player. You can check it out. And if you want to get yourself a set of Wheel Science wheels, Paul and Joe Coombe over at Wheel Science have been kind enough to give you, a loyal listener of the Kona Edge, a 10% discount. All you have to do is use the coupon code Kona Edge at checkout. And if you want to find out more, just head over to thekonaedge.com/wheels. That's where you can get all the details. And if you haven't heard about Wheel Science yet, you're really missing out. They have got some incredible, incredible wheels, and get all the performance at half the price. I kid you not. They are right up there with the best in the world as well. And price-wise, you can't beat them. So go check it out, okay? That's thekonaedge.com/wheels. That's where you can get all the details. And that coupon code is KonaEdge at checkout to get yourself 10% discount. Coming up on today's podcast, we're going to be heading to the UK to chat to Paul Cowling to find out a little bit about his journey into the sport of triathlon, some of the things he does outside of triathlon, and a whole lot more as well. That's all coming your way next. Welcome onto the Kona Edge. My name is Brad Brown, and we head to the UK now, and an absolute pleasure to welcome Paul Cowling onto the podcast. Paul, welcome onto the show. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, no problem. Good to be here. Thanks.
Paul, where in the UK exactly are you?
So, a little county called Rutland, in the middle of England, hour and a half north of London.
Okay. And I said to you before we started recording, that name Rutland rang bells for me. Tell me why there's someone from there who's been on the podcast before.
Yeah, friend of mine, Roger Cannum, you spoke to him in April. Yep. So he's an age grouper. He's absolutely class in his age group. He's been to Kona many times.
Cool. Tell me a little bit about you, sort of background-wise. What do you do for a living? What keeps you busy outside of triathlon?
So I have my own little company. We organise events, local events, at a place called Rutland Water. So we've got the Rutland Marathon and Swim Rutland and other bits and pieces like that. That keeps me busy the rest of the time.
I mean, you were joking as well when I was chatting to you before we started, and you were saying that all your mates wind you up because you only work 5 days a year, apparently.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? When you've got five events, you just turn up on the morning.
Because that's what it takes. I mean, there's no organisation in those things. You want to run a marathon, you pitch up. It's all done for you.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
How did you get into the events game, Paul?
I kind of fell into it, really. I'm not really sure. I just took an opportunity. So Rutland Water is a fantastic location, and it just struck me that it wasn't being utilised, and there were quite a few things that I wanted to do. So I wanted to swim across the lake legally, and I thought, well, let's put an event on, and then that we can make that happen. That's essentially how it started.
Do you get to do your own events? Because that's often also one of the downsides. It's great having these great events, but when you put them on, you don't necessarily get to do them yourself.
Yeah, that's irritating. That's the flaw in the plan. I'm the only one that hasn't had a chance to do it yet, so I get to watch everybody else.
Well, let me tell you, you've got to have a chat to the race director of Ironman South Africa, Paul Wolf. He was the race director for the 70.3 Worlds that just happened in our backyard, and he is a phenomenal age grouper in his own right. And I've been at races and done them where he has been the race director, and literally when the gun goes, he's in his wetsuit, and he's a machine. Don't get me wrong, he's an absolute machine. Wow. And he finishes way before most people do anyway, so he's back at the finish to make sure everything's cool. But he's been doing it for a while, and he's got it sorted. I don't know how he does it, but he gets to race a lot of the events that he actually race directs on. So you're going to have a word with him, because he's got the secret. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, that would be great. But the everyone that comes to help out might have something to say about that.
I love it.
I need them to do the work and just go for a swim or a run. Yeah.
You talk about wanting to swim across the lake legally. I mean, you're pretty active, and that's why we're chatting to you. You're into the sport of triathlon. Where did your love for triathlon start?
Well, just a bit of a weird conversation with my friends.
Was beer involved?
Not really. Like we spoke about it a long time ago, like when we were like really young. And then they went and raced an iron distance event, and they just started to give me a little bit of hassle about it because I hadn't done one. So I was like, no, I'm going to have to deal with this and do one myself. So that's how it started, really. Just arguments with friends, really.
How long ago was that, Paul?
So that was 2013 when I did my first.
Okay. So you've been around the sport. Were you hooked straight away? Was it a case of being a build up to one and done? But once you'd done it, you thought, hang on a sec, this is pretty cool.
Yeah. Obviously, I enjoy doing it. I enjoy swimming, biking, and running, but it's more a bit of a curiosity into what you're capable of, I think, that drives me. Just wondering if I could do it a little bit better, and looking at the guys that are at the top and just how do they do it, trying to figure it out, just seeing exactly what you can get out of yourself, really.
Growing up as a kid, were you pretty active? What sort of stuff were you into?
Yeah, fairly. I from the sort of age of like 15, I sort of worked in water sports. That was my job until I left university, is teaching people to sail, kayak, windsurf, all that kind of stuff. I used to kayak as well, so I raced all over the place, whitewater slalom. That was my
thing. Oh, cool. And, I mean, obviously you've got a competitive streak in you, because you don't get to be, as you say, racing all over, kayaking, but also racing in a race like Kona without having a bit of competitiveness. Where do you think that developed in you?
I don't know, really. I'll probably blame my dad. We still have a go at him about that. Just never letting me win. And now he expects some sympathy, and he expects you to sort of take it easy on him. But like when I was a kid, he didn't take it easy on me. So
it's payback, payback time. Yeah. I love
so
it.
He's fully to blame.
I love it. I mean, you say he never let you win. Was he pretty sporty growing up? Did you grow up in a sporty family?
Yeah, fairly. I think so. There are a lot of sporty people in the family. I don't think they've had the opportunities that I had necessarily. They still sort of hold loads of local records in all the local schools and stuff, but they never took it on past that point. Lots of aunties and uncles and stuff. But I just don't think they had the opportunities I've had, maybe.
Talk to me about that first iron distance triathlon that you ended up doing. I mean, did it go according to plan? Was it? I mean, did you know what you were getting yourself in for?
Oh, no idea. I was terrified. I didn't think it was possible. Essentially, that's how I went into it. I didn't expect to finish it. It's silly. Like, I still think it's a bit silly. You look at the distances and you go, like, really? that's a lot. And then I just thought I'd just see what I could do. Just try and get around it as best I could. I had a couple of mates in the race as well, so there was a bit of competition between us. And I've got a twin brother as well. He was in the race. We just gave it a go.
I'm guessing a lot of the competitive, now that the truth comes out that you've got a twin brother, a lot of the competitive spirit must also come from there. I mean, I'm friends with a few sets of twins, and, man, they go hammer and tong at each other.
Yeah, they say that as well, don't they? Twins can be quite competitive.
Okay, let's answer the question. Between the two of you, who is the better triathlete?
Me. Do you know what the strange thing is? He's a better athlete than I am. He just hasn't taken it as far. He didn't sort of have the ambition to go to Kona and stuff. He just wanted to finish a triathlon, which is how I started. And maybe it's just you just take different paths, he does other things. But he, from a kid, he was a better natural athlete than me. When we used to kayak together, hands down. But then it used to mean that I'd make a lot more mistakes, which is not a bad thing. You kind of learn a lot. So I remember from kayaking that I'd fall in and have to walk back up the course after tipping out my bow like 4 or 5 times a session, and he never would. It meant that I wasn't intimidated by the white water because I'd swam through it every night, whereas he didn't quite have that that edge I had, where he'd be a little bit nervous going into it, but because he was naturally a little bit better than me.
But sometimes, Paul, I love that. And sometimes that's quite a big advantage, you not being the most gifted of athletes, as in talented, but having to scrap for things and having to work harder than most would. I've always said it, in a team sport perspective, if I was selecting players, I would rather have however many there are on the team of guys who are scrappers. They might not be the best players technically, but they are willing to die for their team and for what they're doing, than having a team full of individuals who are great at what they do, but they haven't really worked hard. And I like that. I like, and I've just seen guys, when the going gets tough, it's the scrappy ones that tend to fight harder.
Yeah, you just sort of learn to find a way, don't you? That's something. Yeah, if you're naturally gifted, you don't have to find out. You don't have to explore that. Yeah.
I mean, it would be nice to have the talent, but I think the the scrappiness comes with not having it all your own way. Tell me a little bit about the sort of when Kona first got on the radar for you. When did you start thinking, you know what? There's this mythical island I want to go and race on.
I didn't. I never did. So my first race was 2013. I went back to Ironman UK in 2014. Again, I had the experience of the race before, and I just thought, well, I'll go and see what I can do. The guys that were qualifying for Kona, as far as I was concerned, were just a different species. I couldn't comprehend it, but I qualified. It wasn't. I hadn't booked any accommodation. The awards thing was the night after. I drove all the way home and then went, I better get back up there. My brother drove me back up the next day and we accepted the spot. I had no idea. I didn't really know what it was, apart from people that did know had said to me, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. You've got to go and do it. And then I started doing my research and found out what it was.
I love that. I mean, that is amazing. And I mean, taking the slot is one thing, but then doing the work. I mean, it must be pretty tough. I mean, you've put in the work to do wherever, if it's Ironman UK or if it's Wales or wherever it is, that is your race. That's what you've been focusing on. And all of a sudden, there's another carrot that's been dangled. Is it difficult to pick yourself up and go hard again to get to a race like Kona?
Yeah, it can be. So that first year, I was on the Big Island. It's amazing. It just blows your mind. So it didn't really matter to me. I went and finished and I was delighted. Whereas if you go back again, you want a little bit more, don't you? You want to perform and you want to show what you can do on that stage. So then it becomes a little bit more stressful. And trying to peak again for that race is a little bit harder.
You mentioned that you are quite curious and always trying to figure out what it takes to have the sort of best race you can. What does it take to race the perfect Ironman? What's the secret?
Is there such a thing? I don't know. This is the thing. I don't think there are any secrets. I think everyone's looking for a secret, and I've just come to the conclusion there isn't one. I think you've just got to put the work in. I don't know. Just be prepared and do everything that you can to make sure that you're at your best on that day.
I agree with you. I don't think there are any magic bullets. It's hard work, hell of a hard work to get there and perform well. And it's consistently putting in the hard work. It doesn't happen overnight. It might not even be in a season. It might be over a few seasons. And I think in today's day and age, people try and rush it and they try and sort of push the envelope.
Consistency is the key thing, I think.
Yep.
I think too many people are looking for a shortcut or a magic session and it just isn't. It's just, they just don't exist.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
tell me a little bit about sort of the process. Are you self-coached? Do you work with someone? What's the deal?
So I was for a couple of years, and now I'm coached by somebody called Mary Hardwick. She's local. She's got great facilities, a company called Inspire to Try. So, she looks after me. It's fairly informal, to be honest. A lot of the time I set, my program, and she has input, and it's just somebody there to discuss things with or run it by or just go, am I, what am I doing here? And a second opinion. I've got another guy called James Britton. He's pretty handy on the bike, and he's a really techie guy, whereas I hate all of that. I'm the biggest technophobe going. So he's also been helping me with my bike stuff this year. So there's a couple of guys. Yeah, Mary's my coach, and has been for a couple of years now.
I feel you on the bike techie side of things. I just got a new set of wheels, and I need to get a cassette put on it. I've taken off an old set of wheels, put them on the... I can't do it. I've got to take it to the bike shop. That's how clueless I am, so...
Yeah, it's all... I don't get any...
Give me a spanner, and I'll break it. I can tell you that much, so I'm not even going to give it a bash. Tell me about the... I mean, did you see a significant difference going the coaching route in your performances, or was it just a case of peace of mind that sort of reassured you that you were on the right track?
Yeah, do you know what? The main thing, it's just been my technique, really, which I'm consistently good rather than, like, occasionally good. we'll see progress throughout the season. And I'm not, I mean, good in terms of technique. I'm not breaking. Like, you'd have niggles constantly. And it's just poor form, which... it's just sloppy. It's not really good enough. That's why I addressed it, and I've been to see Mary, so she's really helped me address those things. So really just running properly, so I'm not constantly battered and moaning that my legs hurt.
Let's talk about recovery, because this question's come up quite often. I asked on our Facebook page a couple of weeks ago, like, what questions? I want to make sure that I'm asking the questions other age groupers want to hear. And one of the questions that popped up is recovery. How important is recovery in your sort of training regime in the on season when you're working hard? Tell me about how you approach recovery.
It's probably, I probably don't do enough of it, to be honest. I'm probably more the guy that's likely to run themselves into the ground and then go, oh, what do I do? Mary, help. And that's where she steps in and just goes, right, just calm down and we'll readdress all of this. I kind of try and factor in with commitments. So with my events and stuff, so I'll do a block running in, and then I'll have sort of easier periods where I've got to work more. That's how I tend to factor it in.
As far as the off season, and I'll talk a little bit more about those working around work situation, but I saw something pop up on social media today as well. Like, what do people do in the off season? Do you train right throughout the year, or do you tend to mix things up when you're not training so hard for try? Do you tend to do different things in the off season?
Yeah, so I've done a few things. I'll go and do some different races. Like, they're still related to, really. Like, I ran a sort of ultra race in my off season last year. I take a bit of time doing nothing, a few weeks, and then just slowly getting back into it. But the training changes a little bit, and there's a little bit less stress. Like, it's not the end of the world if something doesn't happen. But I'll do a few things just for fun.
Let's talk about the balance, and your situation is probably very different to most people because you work for yourself, and I say, I don't say that's easier, because I'm also self-employed, and sometimes when you're self-employed, you work for the worst boss in the world, because you tend to drive yourself a lot harder than you would if you were working for someone else. But with what you do, there's peak times where you're just really busy and snowed under and probably can't think of anything else. How do you get the balance right between work and training and doing what you have to do to be competitive as an age grouper?
I don't know, really. It's quite difficult. Like, your mind, it's more in the mind. Like, you can find a bit of time, but when you've got a million people emailing, you're asking questions in the run-up to an event, and you're swimming along and thinking about that. I must get back to this guy. I must get back to that guy. That's when it's quite hard. Over the course of a year, like, it's massively beneficial. Like, I did, when I first started this, I worked for somebody else, and I set this up alongside that to give me the freedom to go and go to Kona and not say, oh, can I have some holiday, please, to my boss? So that's why I'm in the situation I am running these events, just to give me that flexibility.
Yeah, I love it. We always joke, my wife and I, because like we'll go to a pool at like 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning, for example, and have a swim. And you get all the pensioners doing their water aerobics, and they think, oh, he's such a nice guy. We hope he gets a job soon. They obviously don't understand or don't get the sort of what's going on. But tell me a little bit about what you still want to achieve in the sport, Paul. I mean, do you see yourself around the sport of triathlon and doing Ironmans for the next 20, 30 years?
It depends. Like the day it's not interesting, I'll just stop doing it. But that could be 10 years, that could be 20 years. I don't really know. I haven't really thought that far ahead, but I tend to mix it up quite a lot. So every season's fairly different. Like I'll try different challenges, different ways of approaching it. So it keeps it quite fresh. Like I've raced a lot of 70.3 this season and tried to travel a little bit more. Whereas before I'd just focus on a big race like Kona, that'd be it for the season. So it's interesting just for different reasons every year, and as long as I can keep doing that and I enjoy it, I'll just carry on doing it.
How many typically, how many sort of full Ironman distance races would you do in a year?
So three this year. So I raced Taupo, then Ironman UK in Bolton, and then Kona. So before, I've raced one before, which has been Kona, where I've qualified
the year before.
Season four, yeah.
For you physically, what do you think is the optimal? I mean, how many do you think's enough? How many is too much?
Right now, I think three is fine, but last year it would have been too much. But again, that comes down to the technique, and so I'm not hurting myself in a race, so I can pick myself back up and go again. Any other year, I'd have just been broken. I couldn't have done it. Mm. So it depends on your experience and how technically good you are. I mean, how well you recover.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the drive is always there to get better. What do you want to still achieve in the sport? What's, I mean, ultimate goal? If all said and done, you'd be happy to walk away from the sport if you've done X, Y, and Z?
Just if I could be like satisfied with my race. I put a really good race together, and I feel like I've reached my potential. I haven't mucked it up a bit. There's no such thing as a perfect race, but if I can put a good season together, and I don't really have an ultimate sort of list. It's just do what I think I'm capable of.
Yeah,
I guess.
You mentioned traveling a bit and doing a few more 70.3s to date. What's the best race you've done? What's one that everyone should do that you've done?
Taupo is great. That is a blueprint for how to run a triathlon. It's really good. Like, there's loads of things. They just do a really good job. It's really athlete focused. So there's no hassle. There's no... They go out of their way to look after you. It's just like runners needs bags and bits and pieces like that. Like they're really on it. You're not mucking around in a tent, like shouting your number out, going, get my bag. It's all ready for you. They just hand it to you. And just little things like that. I was really impressed with the whole thing. It'd been really well thought out.
Are you as an event organizer yourself, are you pretty critical? I mean, I worked as a student, I worked as a waiter, and I don't think I've ever been to a restaurant without looking at a restaurant going, man, they could do this better, they can do that better, and that was 20 years ago. Do you go to a race and take notes, essentially, going like...
Oh, yeah. I pick up ideas all the time. I really, like, the only thing that's annoying is if it's something really easy and it's almost like they couldn't be bothered to do it. That's when it's frustrating. But if I don't sort of critique them all the time and think I could do a better job because I realise how difficult it is to get everything together. But yeah, I take a lot of ideas from these events.
What's still on the bucket list race-wise? What do you still want to do?
I just look at the schedule and just pick cool places or where my mates are racing and stuff like that now. So Kona's just been that ultimate race that I've always just wanted to do. I want to do the 70.3 Worlds. That's going to be a big focus for next year. So that's in Nice. So I really, really want to do that and just see what I can do at over 70.3 against the top guys. So that's going to be my main focus for next year, I think.
Brilliant. As far as Kona and the attraction to Kona, what makes that place and that race so special compared to the rest of the races and places on the circuit?
For me, coming from England, it may as well be on the moon. Like it feels so epic just getting there. It takes so long, and it is so different to home. It's pretty crazy. And then just the atmosphere there and just everything that's going on in race weekend, race day, it's just a bit mind-blowing, really.
I mean, is it difficult to stay focused on the race with, as you say, with everything going on, all the side shows? Is that something you have to, if you want to have a good race, you have to focus on not getting caught up in the rest of the stuff?
Yeah, a little bit. So my tactic for that is I stay on the road in Waikoloa. So it's a good sort of 20, 30 minute drive into town. So, I can sit in a restaurant and there's not blokes in speedos walking past me every 2 seconds. It's very normal. I can just sit there and just chill out a little bit and then get into sort of final preps and go into the circus, enjoy it, and then walk away. So that's my strategy. I don't think I could cope with staying in the middle of town, to be honest.
How do you deal? I mean, you're talking about, I mean, I laugh when you said it could be on the moon because it's so different to home. How do you prepare for a race that's that different? I mean, climate-wise, for most people, it's. I mean, the heat is something, the humidity is something, the wind is something else. How do you prepare yourself physically for something like that, living where you do?
It's pretty hard. Like I do a lot of indoor bike work, just where it's nice and hot. But a lot of the time, I'm just getting mentally prepared for it. You've just got to know that it's going to be pretty hard. I'll go out there and acclimatise, but the main thing is just don't let it get in your head. Just be ready for those conditions mentally, and then do whatever you can when you get on the island just to get ready.
Fantastic. Well, Paul, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about all your individual disciplines, the swim, the bike, the run, and also just on the nutrition side of things, but we'll save that for next time. Thanks for your time on the Kona Edge today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
And that's it for this edition of the Kona Edge. Thank you so much for joining me today. And before I go, a massive thank you to Airedale Mike, who left us a review on iTunes. If you haven't left us a review yet, please do. It really helps move the needle and gets more people listening to the podcast. And I mentioned a couple of days ago that we've just hit 1 million downloads. And one of the reasons we've been able to hit 1 million downloads is because of reviews like this one from Airedale Mike. And I love this. Mike, thank you so much. He says, I am an old Ironman triathlete, 71 years young and still competing. Mike, that is amazing. I love that. This podcast is always in my ears, as along with my Airedale, we take our early morning 1 mile walk. Keep the interviews coming. Mike, you are a rock star, man. 71 years old, still doing Ironman. I love it. Absolutely love it. I love the sport and I love the characters around it. So, Mike, thank you so much for taking the time to leave that review. And there, you've got no excuse. If someone who's 71 years old can figure out how to leave an iTunes review, if you're not quite sure how, you can check it out on our website. But it's pretty easy, and I would really, really appreciate it. Mike, I appreciate you taking the time to do that. And best of luck, mate. Looking forward to following your journey to your next race. Before I go, a huge thank you to the sponsor of this edition of the Kona Edge. It was brought to you by Wheel Sites, all the performance at half the price. World-class race wheels you can get right now. They ship worldwide. They come with a lifetime warranty, and it's free shipping as well. So go check them out, okay? And if you buy yourself a set of wheels, you can get yourself a 10% discount courtesy of Wheel Science, just for being a loyal listener of the Kona Edge. The website to get to is thekonaedge.com/wheels, and be sure to use the coupon code KONAEDGE at checkout, okay? That's KONAEDGE at checkout, and get yourself 10% off. Until tomorrow, from myself, Brad Brown, it's cheers.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.